This episode of The Real Dirt is sponsored by Cultivate Colorado. Grow your dreams, cultivate your legacy. CultivateColorado.com. This episode of The Real Dirt is sponsored by Cannacraft, leading the way in cannabis science, California.
All right, here we are, The Real Dirt with Chip Baker.
How you doing, Chip?
I'm doing great, Stacy. On today's dirt, we have Stacy Johnson of Harvest House in Nederland, Colorado. And he has just rolled the biggest joint of any guest I have ever had. That would be a bomber for sure. That's so big. I'm going to have to take a picture of it. Not too many people roll big joints like that anymore. It seems to be a thing of the Colombian and Mexican days. What was the first weed that you puffed on, Stacy?
The old East Coast Brown.
East Coast Brown.
The East Coast Brown.
Mexican Frown.
Yeah.
Dirt weed.
I think the first quarter pound I bought was Acapulco Gold.
Was it gold?
It was more sun bleached.
Sun bleached.
Than gold. Oh, God.
Some of the last brick weed I remember getting was in gold kilos.
Really?
And looking back on it, I was like, I don't know, 22. Looking back on it, it was probably sun bleached. Not knowing any different though, we were excited. Oh, yeah. Puff, puff, pass. No, I got to do something about this studio. It's not the best for passing here. What are we smoking here?
That is Death by Cherries. Cherry Pie OG cutting.
Wow. It has a very food-like flavor. Like a July 4th afternoon, man. Just that. A cornucopia of flavors.
Straight from Nederland.
Straight from Nederland, Colorado. Nederland has one of the older histories of counterculture in Colorado. I have heard about Nederland. Nederland and Fort Collins were the first two towns I heard about in association with weed 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. How long you been there?
20 years in 2017. I moved in
97. We talked about this. I went to California when you went to Colorado. Both of us fleeing the East Coast, almost like a Bob Dylan song.
I did a brief near a year stint in San Rafael, and that didn't stick. So I flirted with Nederland for a little bit and finally came to stay in 97.
We were going to move here in 97 and got to Colorado. Couldn't find any weed. It was summertime. We didn't know anybody.
About at that point, everybody grew in rock wool here.
Yeah.
So it's been a big change in the culture.
In pots. I remember it was rock wool and rocks and pots floating drain. General Hydro, three-part. Yeah, that Hydro ruled Colorado. Even until we started stores here in 2008.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now that culture has almost gone away. There's a lot of it still, but a lot the flood and drain.
Yeah.
Rock wool, flood and drain, rocks. Tons of rock wool still, and I still have lots of rocks. I'd be slanging rocks left and right up at the store, but lots of rock wool still.
Yeah, I know probably nobody who uses rock wool at this point now.
It's amazing how much we sell of it. It just, the croutons, right, those have become really popular because people just water them in, like with a hose and a wand, like they would a soil pot.
Well, the roots I see on those scenarios sure look nice.
Man, huge plants, right? But it does lead to a quality, you know, issue. And, man, there's a disposal issue. I feel bad about disposing rock wool.
Oh, yeah.
It's an environmental cost for sure for growing. Just throwing all that stuff away. So you moved here in 97.
Mm-hmm.
When did you become involved with medical cannabis?
In 2008. I believe I began caregiving and got my own card, and I was not one of the early adopters, but...
Right, you let the pioneers get slaughtered, so to speak.
Yeah.
Right, because they did get slaughtered in the early days. I mean, you know, yeah, totally. And you had your problems, too, in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, zoning, and I know all that was going on. So let's just say it formally. Give me the who, what, when. Who are you? What are you?
I am a cannabis business owner from Nederland, Colorado. I began my business activities with medical marijuana in 2009. I had a store open from that point until, I guess, mid to late 2011 when House Bill 1284 began taking effect.
So, hey, let's pause right there. So you filed for medical cannabis producer and seller in 2009, went through the early stages of the paperwork.
The paperwork probably would have been in 2010.
Right. That's when
I applied before they actually wrote the rules. Mm-hmm. So the rules were written after I paid my money, and there was no recourse to get your money back if you withdrew. So
Right. So you operated a medical facility, grow and dispensary, until this House Bill 1284 came along in 2011. What was that exactly?
Well, the bill caused the first regulations to be written, and that forced all the businesses that were not vertically integrated into a vertically integrated business model. So consequently, people who were good retailers but didn't have a grow were forced into relationships with people who had a grow, or vice versa, or, you know, all of the different pieces required by legislation and regulation ended up forcing people into
zoning. There were several regulations.
All sorts
that
of
all came through here, right?
All sorts of, you know, it was basically an unregulated industry up until that point. So it kind of it left me without a grow, and I wasn't interested in becoming involved with anybody else. Some bad experiences with business partners along the way getting to that point, and I decided to withdraw my application and withdrew from the industry.
Right, just waited it out. That happened with so many people in the early days, and it's going to continue to happen with people in the new states as they want to be first to the to sale, so to speak. Or you weren't even first to sale, really. I mean, you were on the first wave, but other people are already involved in doing it, right? But I saw it happen to you and several other people at the time. It's like you put everything together correct. You put an investment into a location, investment into a grow, and then they issued compliance rules, mm-hmm. and you weren't able to comply.
Yeah,
right. You'd already invested a significant amount of resources into your previous situation.
Oh yeah.
Right. What made you decide to stop, really? And was there like a light bulb moment where you're like, hey, this isn't worth it to me, or I need to wait for the laws to change?
Even at that point, real estate was beginning to become scarce that was zoned correctly. People were beginning to charge exorbitant prices. And I just I didn't feel like my market in Nederland, which was a traditional home-growing community and also a community full of many medical marijuana caregivers, I just decided to hold out. And I guess I don't even think it's fair to say I was holding out. I really didn't anticipate recreational cannabis passing when it did. But let's just say I kept my cards on the table and was able to apply early on when it was opened up to the existing medical marijuana licensees converting to recreational. Took about 14 to 16 months from applying to actually opening, so over a year.
Wow, that's normal businesses. Many businesses in the U.S., we can just go into a business office of our local state government and apply for a license, start business the next day. That's not the way it works with cannabis, is it?
No. Everything is at least a 2-4 month kind of...
Let's talk about that process that took 18 months, right? So it was more than just paperwork.
No, it was a lot of paperwork because they want extensive background information, even things that you may have forgotten about from, you know, your youth. Fortunately.
Oh, that's right. I did get arrested.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that with a lot of folks trying to get their industry badges, you know, having stuff from the 80s or early 90s come up.
Right.
That they had not even a recollection of.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with cannabis, or maybe it's not a problem. It allows us to forget some things. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, many people, even though the law does not prohibit a criminal background history, some things it does prohibit specifically, but you just have to show the court documents to say that you had some altercation, and it could be like, oh, I didn't pay my taxes even, right? I mean, it's
well,
not just arrest records.
The key things that they're looking for is your honesty. So, you know, you might not feel good about, you know, some incident in your past. They're not really looking at you to judge you for that. They want to see you being honest and forthcoming with the answers for the questions that they have. And those are, you know, do include taxes and any criminal charges, you know, anything beyond a regular typical traffic ticket they want to know about.
So you file a stack of paperwork. I've heard people say how large it was.
It's a ream of paper.
It's a ream of paper, literally. You file this paperwork, your background documentation, you give it to the government, and then you wait.
They have, I can't remember what the allotted time for them to either approve you or reject you.
They had some period of time. Did you have to have an attorney help you with this?
No, I have a background in real estate, okay, so I'm kind of familiar with the legalese and the way to fill out forms, and have an attorney friend who helped me with any questions that I might have had along the way, but basically did it all by myself.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, one of the things people misconceive about the people who get involved in the cannabis industry here in Colorado, at least all over the country, I'm sure, is everybody is not the stereotypical stoner. You had a background in real estate, were active real estate agent, had a career previous to this and decided, hey, it's a pretty good industry to go into.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I like marijuana. I'm a fan of medical marijuana.
Yeah, been a big home grower for a long time. So
had a good history with it.
Yeah.
Right? And some fine weed we're smoking today here. Stacy, nice white ash, not harsh at all. We've smoked this huge joint down to a roach the size of a small little hot box car.
Yeah.
So you apply for the paperwork, you wait. There's some zoning issues. Were there any struggles that happened over the course of this with the paperwork? Was there moments where you didn't think you were going to be able to get the license?
No, I felt confident that I was going to be approved. But there's always a, you know, nervous anticipation waiting for the paperwork to come through. You know, you have signed file or forms that allow, you know, the government to investigate you to their satisfaction.
They ever knock on your door?
Never. Never. They didn't call any of my references or anything like that.
Your kids would have answered the door, though.
Yeah.
I held them at bay.
Go away. But, you know, I would say that the hardest part was dealing with the municipality's building department, which I didn't want to engage until I had my final approval from the state to finish my tenant fit-out. That was being given wrong information by them as far as what they required, you know, for their zoning requirements and the building code and what they wanted to see as far as engineered drawings. We had an initial meeting after a preparatory phone call with the head of the building department, and was told conflicting things that set me back probably 3 months as far as having engineering done that they needed to have done.
Yeah, municipalities often don't have it didn't have it together in the early days.
No.
You know, they were just getting flooded with information. It wasn't like it used to be, and it's still hard enough to talk to some small county and town building code people or zoning people. It's because they don't have so much business in it, so they don't know day-to-day what's going on. Unlike large cities like Denver, I'm sure you can get your misinformation there too, but it's pretty straightforward.
Well, I have a relatively good relationship with Town Hall. I was involved with both mayors' boards that address the regulations concerning first medical as it related to the town of Nederland, and then sat on the mayor's task force for the working on the regulations for recreational marijuana. So the town hall is small and there's good access, but the building department is a contracted service. So it was not actually dealing with the town.
Right. I remember this now. So hey, let's take a break right there. Dirt with Chip Baker. Let's keep rolling it up here with Stacy Johnson of Harvest House, Nederland, Colorado. Whoop. You got your license. When did you get your retail license? When was the date?
Mid-January 2015.
All right. So it became legal in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw it start to happen 2014. Retail was going on in your community or around you.
Nederland had one of the first retail or first medical shops to convert
to retail.
Right.
But you were just one of the new applicants. So
I was
you
the second one to
medical to retail. You were just applying for a retail license.
Correct. I think they allowed only medical licensees to convert for the first 10 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
Then they opened it up, I believe, in October of 2014, that new applicants could apply. And it took me a couple months to get it together. It's a little late getting out of the gate. Got it in mid-December and got approval. Maybe it was February of 2015, not January. But in that range.
Right. And were you open that day?
No.
It took you
no,
a while to
then
open
I
still.
Finished fitting out the grow, renovating the shop, and
and this is all to specific cannabis coating or general coating for construction?
Both.
Right, both.
Yeah.
Engineers were required at every step of the way. Approval on everything you did was you were scrutinized. It wasn't like building a normal construction project.
No, you're dealt with in a punitive manner in almost every area, whether it's with contractors or the municipal government or, you know, anything. Anything is a premium and takes extra time when it comes to cannabis.
Absolutely. And, you know, we feel this all the time as a grow store. I'll have contractors come in and literally clap their hands together. Yeah, listen, listen, assholes. Here's what I see you do. You're like, oh, man, you guys are making so much money in here. And when they do that, I just never call them back, push them out the door, right? They're just going to milk me for it. We're just regular business people. We're making regular money, yep. Right? We work just like regular business people, irregular hours. Sometimes it's we don't quit. Sometimes we don't have to show up at the office.
Well, it was really telling when I was getting security and surveillance equipment bids. There were pot industry experts that were providing me with bids that were close to twice what non-pot industry security contractors
were. Yeah, I've seen the same thing happen. Right.
So...
Yeah, it's just gouging the marketplace.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It was a feeding frenzy.
And it still is to some degree. I mean, that's what happened with the real estate, too. You know, people realized that they were zoned applicably, and I know it's a supply and demand market, and some people really took advantage of it. And, I mean, you know, people paid, so it is what it is. right? But the overpayment of real estate just drives the whole real estate market up and creates this buying frenzy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You opened up day one. Were you producing, were you allowed to grow your own weed? How did you open up? Did you start growing weed?
No, I started growing weed, and then it took us a little bit longer to get the store finished.
Mm-hmm.
Get all of the systems in place, the standard operating procedures, and being able to open up and be compliant. I hired a person with the retail experience to help me open up and get the initial point of sale system in place and vendors set up and product lines in the shop, and opened in, I guess, mid-February.
Mid-February this year, mm-hmm. You're open for sales.
Correct.
First day. How many strains you have on the shelf?
I think we had like 28 strains on the shelf.
28 strains. You've always had a few strains going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not a lot. Some people have far too many to keep up with, you know. I guess everybody has their own opinion on that, but it just becomes so difficult if you have 70 different strains to keep up with each one of them, make them each unique and different.
Yeah, you know, we had some definite overlaps on the shelf, and, you know, let some things go and obtain some other varieties.
How many run through your shop currently?
I think we're kind of light on the shelf right now. There's 12 or 13 different varieties on the shelf right now.
13,
probably 35 or so in the barn and in different stages.
In the barn, that's what you call your grow room?
The grow room, yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Are you still selling your cannabis in jars? You still sell it in jars?
Well, we have cracker jars that we display it in, but unfortunately the state regulates all pot to go out of our cannabis products, to go out of the store in some sort of a certified childproof container.
Mm.
So, but we do have very nice European canning jars.
Yeah, those are
available
great.
For folks that prefer to store their cannabis in glass.
Yeah, I couldn't. Last time I was at your shop, I got one of those.
Yep.
Got a great picture at your shop as well in front of your no hippie parking.
Yeah.
Right.
Hippie parking only.
Hippie parking only.
Right. All others will be stoned.
Yeah, hippie parking only. All others will be stoned. You'll see me on my Facebook page. Fan page. You've got pretty good herb up at Harvest House, in Chip's opinion. It's hard to find great weed. You've got pretty good weed up there. I know you're really critical, which often makes a great grower. Over and over again, I've heard you say, this ain't any good. Like, it's totally fine. When I was up there last, as a matter of fact, you're like, this is the old stuff. I'm embarrassed to sell this to you.
Well, you know, you should know an A from an A and a B from a B.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in the commercial cannabis market, it's hard to get great weed here, man. Right? You can get weed on any single corner, but it's hard to get great weed.
Yeah.
Right, right. And you got some great weed up there. What's your favorite strain these days?
Let's see. I think it would be something called Pura Vida.
Pura Vida. What's that cross? Vida.
I think that's... I'm not a big strain geek, so I'm shooting from the hip. I believe it's Pure Kush or L.A. Pure Kush crossed with Appalachian. And I've got another one, Orange Ghost, which does not... I would be scared to try to dissect what it is. I don't know what it is.
Ghost sounds like Ghost OG.
Yeah, it's a real fruity thing, so I'm not sure.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, the name game, man. We've heard them all over the past 15 years.
Sometimes two or three times.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. Yeah, I see them recirculated for sure over time. I guess there's only so many cool names, right?
Well, the naming thing is definitely something interesting. I think we're done with the era of naming things like AK-47 and it's real... masculine names. It's been interesting to watch how women respond to the names of cannabis, really.
You know, I watched Jessica, my wife, my lovely super stoner, very knowledgeable wife, you know, get taken over by the nice names too. Right. That sounded nice.
Oh yeah.
It's that nice, it's something something nice Kush. This was very fairy tale angel Kush.
Yeah, we've got one on the shelf right now called Guava Lotus.
Oh, it picks up.
If a woman doesn't know what she wants, she definitely will want that once she sees the name.
Mm. They say that women 35 to 43 or something are one of the biggest markets right now.
Well, that's definitely who we're trying to serve.
Yeah. Well, I can totally see this as, you know, guys are always willing to, like, take risks. You know, as a species, you know, we have a 50-50 mortality rate because guys die off so much. Right. But because we take all this risk. And, you know, women are definitely more conservative on risk. And now that it's legal, right, I know plenty of women stoners for sure. But now that it's legal, it's opened it up to so many other people, right? So many other women. And I mean, this could all just be marketing. I don't know. We're manipulated by all that shit every day, but it seems applicable to me. It's always been a sausage party anytime you go to, you know, a barn burner.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's not near enough women there. Right?
Well, you know, it's interesting being on the counter and seeing who actually comes through the shop. There's I'd give it a good 50-50, you know. Seems that the ladies like to get it stoned as much as the guys.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And, you know, definitely not relying on anybody to help them with their purchases.
It's a male-dominated industry, though, still, right? Yeah. Right? Like, we're going to have a few women growers on the show here in the future. I got a couple of invites out right now. But it's a male-dominated industry.
Yep.
From the owners all the way to the growers.
Well, we've got a really nice manager, Whitney, who I think brings a really nice feminine aspect to the front end. And I've recently hired my mom to run the trim crew.
Oh, yeah. And keeping in the family.
Yep.
All right.
Have her watch my back.
Right, right. That's great. Yeah, do you know the Women of Weed? Local
no.
political group? Yeah,
no.
We're a member of those people. Women Grow, Women of Weed. We're members of both of those.
Women Grow. I like what I've seen of that organization.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they have meetings just right down the street from us. We try to make them. We get a few a year. Let's talk about the barn.
Okay.
You have a craft cannabis operation. Right. You have a handful of lights. They're all hand tended. Tell us about what goes on there.
Well, the barn was planned during my attempt at the medical market. It's a little bit small. It's got two sides of 12,000 watts run in opposition of each other. So that while one room is dark, the other room is on. Generally split from midnight to noon, then noon to midnight, so that there's always a room on that you can work in. Small veg area, and basically trying to balance out real small batches so that we can have fresh and new and unique pot on the shelves. It takes a little bit of juggling since, you know, some things grow at a different rate and mature at a different rate. So not everything works out as planned, but...
How many lights again?
24 in total in the flowering rooms.
The flower room.
Yeah.
35 strains, you say?
Probably in the hopper at this point right now.
Do you run multiple strains a light, or how do you segregate?
No, I'm generally trying to run a batch or a strain per light,
mm-hmm.
so that I can have kind of a cycle of new things coming through.
Right. So it is like it is craft cannabis in the sense it's like a home grow where you'd grow one light of one strain.
Yeah, you know that's kind of what we're trying to reproduce is the feel and the quality of old homegrown, as we used to call it, kind bud.
Right. You guys, are you still growing the bigger plants?
I'm growing, I'd say, medium shrubby kind of plants at about 9 per light.
All right. Yeah. You had your numbers down to four or something at
one
point.
Yeah, and then I was experimenting with the Sea of Green for a little bit, of up to like 36 per light.
Right.
And found that some things responded well. And
some things don't.
And some things just really didn't want to be that crowded, and just it was a disaster. Not a disaster, but the goal wasn't obtained.
Yeah, the Sea of Green's a great automation technique, and if you've got plenty of cuttings and the right strain, it just makes it it totally works, right? But it is a labor intensive commercial style technique.
Yeah, especially doing, you know, one or one and a half light batches.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
If I was monocropping just one thing, it would be
simple. Absolutely. But when you have 24 different trays and reservoirs, it's difficult.
Yep.
Right. Right. Do you feed all the plants the same thing?
Yeah.
Right. I different don't, feeding schedule, maybe.
But. Depending on, you know, where they are, you know, relative to, when they were, what groups were flowered at the same time. But I'm more of a, I don't follow a schedule generally. I just garden the way it seems like the plants need it at the time.
Right, right. Nine plants per light, 24 lights. You don't have that many plants going at once. What's your mom room look like?
My mom room, I have a bunch of T5 shelved systems that are, I'm able to have anything in anywhere from 3-inch square cups to, I like to do my final veg in the old rose pots from Bato, the Bato pots.
Oh, yeah. Those are great pots.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and once the plants are nice and about to begin to stretch and become unhappy, I'll flip them in a 3 to 5 gallon.
Right. So you watch the plants. It's not on a time schedule.
No.
Do you have to generate a standard operating procedure for regulations or?
No. I mean, there's general, as with regard to the areas like recording the waste that comes out of the garden, harvest, you know, all of that stuff gets recorded in metric. But then before then, it gets recorded onto a piece of paper, and that paper is saved in a log.
Right, right, absolutely. So you're growing your weed by hand, literally. You don't have times. This isn't like I'm going to veg this for 21 days and flower it for 52 days.
No, and I don't follow the traditional looking at the resin glands, or, you know, for me it's an overall appearance of the flowers that lets me know when the plant's done, and I think that, you know, depending on year and the subtlety in the room, that can really vary.
It can. You still do pay attention to the dates, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean... Because
it's a great gauge. Oh, I got to start looking right around here.
Yeah. You know, but generally, you know, the flower formation tells me when it's done.
Right. Yeah, I've seen Sour Diesel finish, really, truly finish 72 to 77 days, and I've seen people pick it 60 days, you know, as early as... but yeah, it truly depends on environment, how it was grown, who it was grown, how big the plant is.
Yeah.
All of that, right? Right.
Absolutely.
So are there any plant that you don't like growing? Any cannabis plant?
I don't like growing train wreck.
Oh, you don't like the train wreck.
I love the train wreck.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I love it and I do grow it.
Do you have that cut?
I have the purple train wreck.
Oh, the purple train wreck. Oh, sweet, sweet.
That's the only train wreck I have in the house right now.
Yeah, I like the growth pattern to that more than I like the smoking of it, right? It's good weed, don't get me wrong, but I just smoked a ton of it.
It's a pretty pot.
It's some of the most beautiful purple cannabis out there. It has baby
nearly
powder like, you know, trichomes on it. It's just covered in it.
Yeah.
Dark purple. Yeah, that's a great, 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 great weed, if I do say so. But I don't like to really smoke it. It's weird.
I haven't smoked it in a while, so I'm...
Right. I'll hit it if you got it. You know, you know, I will. I'm not that discriminating. Yeah, the true train wreck, though, the Arcata cut or one of those cuts, E30 8 or whatever it was. That those would be great. I don't know anybody who really has that here. It's kind of gone from flavor altogether, really.
Yeah, I haven't had the old Arcata Trainwreck cut that I had for quite a while now.
No, it doesn't. It's some of the last old school weed. It doesn't look new school enough to be so popular. And when grown right, the high is just so violent, man. Just like heart pound is like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah. Hey, you know what? I think it's a perfect time to take another break. This is The Real Dirt. Stacy Johnson and Harvest House. Here's rolling 101. So what's the key to rolling a joint, Stacy? Oh, shit. He literally is sticking two papers together.
Three.
He's going to stick three papers together. This guy is from the 80s for sure. 70s. Wow. So obviously Stacy's key to rolling a big joint is three papers and about, oh, I'd say 5 grams of weed.
That's, I don't know, it's an eighth, maybe 4 grams, I'd bet.
Oh, okay, 4 grams. Oh, yeah.
A full one is about 5 grams.
Oh, okay, we're rolling a shorty today. Right, he's trying to keep it together for the show. So he's gingerly pushing all the weed into the paper, making it one level across it.
It'll be a cone.
Oh, no, he's rolling a cone, which means that he's twisting out the amount of cannabis towards one side of the paper. The other side's larger. Now, Stacy's got some pretty fat fingers here. How he's able to do this, I'm not quite sure. It's a dramatic cone shape, too. It's not a gentle cone. Now that is a Rasta-style cone right there. It was just silence in the room as he twisted it. Look, that is huge. Look at that. No wonder you decided to go into the cannabis business. That's a professionally rolled joint. Do you roll the joints yourself at the store?
I do not.
You have a joint machine or a packer or something?
A bud tender.
A bud tender. He just rolls joints all day. Do you guys use the pre-rolled?
We do those cone stuffed cones.
Here, why don't you put that down on the tray and we'll see it. We'll get a good picture of it there. Oh, that's awesome. A 4 gram cone. That's what we're going to call this episode. 4 gram cone with Stacy Johnson, Harvest House.
Booyah!
That's great.
So if you could name not that I'll be able to do this, but if you had a song for this episode that would like signify or be a metaphor for us in this conversation.
I don't know. There's so many good reggae songs that, you know, at this point now with legalization or regulation become so irrelevant.
Legalize it.
Yeah. And, you know, just the hassles that people have had through the years for having a plant in their backyard or basement. You know, a lot of the folks, my kids certainly will never, you know, have the issues that we had.
Right. Because now, if you get regulated for cannabis, they fine you. You don't necessarily go to jail. Right.
Yeah, but it seems the municipalities are using a new strategy through municipal ordinances to limit the home grows.
Right.
Limit patients' rights to grow their own medicine. And that's certainly a disappointing turn of events.
Right, because there is room and space for unregulated small scale industry.
Oh,
right,
for sure.
To grow a few plants. It shouldn't be that big of a deal.
There's room for privacy, and it's nobody's business what's happening in someone's backyard or in their basement, in my opinion. Oh,
I got one for you. Nobody's fault but mine.
There you go.
Yeah, that's definitely the largest joint that's been smoked on this podcast.
Well, that's a shame.
Hey, you know, I have my professional friends over.
Well, that's a shame.
You happen to be a professional joint roller smoker extraordinaire.
El Rocho Grande.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure almost every guest has smoked out on the air, so to speak, with me. It's normalized, right? Normalized. Some guests have brought it, some others haven't. If you're invited or want to come onto the show, no. It is totally appropriate to bring a sack of the finest cannabis.
Have you had any dabbers on here?
Dabbers are up on Thursday. This week we'll have the dabbers on. We'll have Jordan from Terpex, cannabis extract producer. You know those guys, Terpex?
I'm familiar with the name, but don't know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great guys. Real mellow, real into the craft.
I'm going to begin holding back parts of my harvest to have processed so I can have my own material, my own nug run stuff.
Oh, sweet. Are you going to pick strain specific or just give bottoms or?
I'm going to, because my batches are so small, I'm probably going to do a little research to see what's going to make a nice concentrate. And
dude, that purple train rank gives it some of the best.
Really?
It really is.
So I'll probably pull back, and if I have a batch that's fat enough, have some of that so that I can have the flower and the concentrate, whatever form it might be, on the shelf at the same time.
Right, right. Awesome. Oh, yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. So are you selling clones?
Not yet. We're gearing up to address that market.
Oh, awesome, because I know you're a small-scale producer. You tier one? You're tier one, so you can have 1,800 plants. Is that it?
Yeah, and that's cut back from 3,600, which they gave me the first year, right. Which I know where came.
So you're
going to
be selling cannabis flower, cannabis extract, cannabis clones. You'll be able to get the clones of the flower and the extract that you buy in your store.
Correct.
Oh wow, that's great. Yep. Few places have that, and you have authentic clones. I know we've talked about this in the past. You know, you try to get the best possible genetic that represents, you know, the namesake. Do you have the cookies? Are you growing any cookies cut?
I've got a variety of cookies cuttings.
Yeah. I'm familiar with the forum cut. That's what most people seem to have. It has more purple hues. I think it might be a better grower. I'm not really familiar with the others.
I like a lot of the cookies crosses that I've got.
Yeah, that cookies OG. That's so good. A couple of people are doing that.
Probably the most popular one we've had run through there was Talent Scout, which was LA Confidential by Girl Scout Cookies.
You got that LA?
Yeah.
Awesome. Talent Scout. Do you have that one still?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, people love it.
What's special about it?
Unfortunately, I think the name.
Oh, it's just the name.
Well,
just
I mean, it's nice pot for sure, but and I really think that there's a certain amount of sizzle that sells.
Absolutely, it's marketing, it's salesmanship. There's nothing wrong with business.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with that. Absolutely not.
So,
right? It's just some names are just stupid.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's just so stupid. And the renaming of stuff that's already has a name, like, I mean, I understand, like, naming a cut, right? But you should be specific about naming the cut, like that. Like Shaw's Cut, that Kush Cleaner that we call a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
You know that one? Yeah, that's a heart attack cut of the Kush Cleaner. That stuff's great.
The regulations definitely make it difficult with genetics. So
how do you collect them?
Well, you have to get them from within the system or do some in-house breeding.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys currently breeding?
We've got a couple little things started, but we're really lacking the space to do things right. So we're really being conservative in that area.
Right, right. It's breeding such a... You're just rolling the dice there, man. I mean, you might find something great and you might not, though. You know, it might just be the same thing or something worse than you started with.
It's a big slot machine game. Let's see which genes express themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cha-ching.
And, you know, with my scenario where I'm trying to do small batches, it makes it very difficult for me to...
Experiment,
to
right?
devote much square footage to the pheno hunt.
Right, yeah, 9 plants per light is a little difficult. I guess you could amp it up for seed or clone searching, but just to see.
Well, I had the benefit of friends already with nice collections within the system, so that helps out a lot.
Right.
Could share amongst friends.
Yeah, that friends is how we've always shared cuttings in the past, right? That's how people got it. It's like, oh, no, this is my group of friends. This is my group of friends, right?
And it goes along with its provenance of where you got it.
Clones, back clones. Another quick break. Here we are, Real Dirt, Chip Baker. That large joint is still going. Huge plumes of smoke are coming out of it. The tip is so resiny. It's going to be, I bet it's not going to smoke all the way through. We'll see. So you are able to buy seeds here, those. They're local producers, right?
There are just really getting to be some desirable seeds coming on the market.
You know who the local seed people are?
The ones that I'm excited about are from Dark Horse Genetics.
Yeah, Dark Horse. Yeah, we're going to try to have them on the show here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, totally.
That'd be good.
Yeah, we're involved in this grow off thing together.
Huh.
We're sponsors, Cultivate sponsor, and it's called the Grow Off.
What's that entail?
I'm not really sure. It's a weed competition. You should try to get in on it. Look it up. You'd be good at it. You get the cuttings from him. It's his genetic. Every 200 people get one genetic, and then you compete in October or November.
That's probably something I couldn't do with regulations.
It's a regulated thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's regulated.
Huh.
So you can get the clone from him, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Totally. Yeah, totally. It's 200 regulated shops. Yeah, Cultivate sponsoring it, the Grow Off, I believe it's called.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be cool, man.
I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll hook you up.
Okay.
I'll hook you up, man. You planting seeds?
I have been.
Right?
Yep, I've got, I don't want to talk about what's coming.
Okay. Suspense. Suspense. Man, let me ask you this question. You see over here on the board here, I've got this thing, and it says grower, dealer, smoker. Which one are you? Which one do you most identify with?
Oh, I'd say a grower.
Grower. Excellent. Excellent.
Yep.
I ask people this question that are in the grow business or the hydro business, and you'd be in. You know, many of them say they're growers, no matter what they're doing. But
yeah.
I thought you might say you were a smoker.
Well, I mean, I was initially a smoker, but I became a grower because I wanted to be a better smoker.
Yeah, right.
Totally. You know, I remember it was a real dry time in Maryland about, I don't know, 88, 89, thereabouts.
People were growing weed back in the 80s.
Way back then.
Wow.
Yep. And there was this old High Times article on a garden called Sharky's Garden.
Oh, I remember that one.
And I was like, well, I'm doing that. That's what I'm doing. And that was kind of the thing that, you know, got me into home growing.
Right, right. Yeah, I remember that article. Sharky's Garden. Okay, all right. I used to collect High Times. I still have a large collection of High Times and Sensimilla tips. It's some great, great issues. Was that the indoor grow in New York? Was that Sharky's Garden?
I don't remember that well, but
okay. You rented like a some type of frozen foods warehouse or something.
It was the first like really
big commercial,
nice, tightly put together Sea of Green Garden. Yeah, well, that was the style of back then.
I'll have to look that up. Sharky's Garden. Yeah. Totally. Oh, man. The good old days. Hey, are you growing any CBD strains?
I'm not, but I am on the hunt for some regulated CBD cuttings.
Yeah, there's a Centennial Seeds.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some stuff, and I think they're regulated and they sell cuttings too. I think. I'm not sure about that, but I know they're regulated and they sell seeds.
I've definitely been broadening the topicals, concentrates, and edibles that we carry that have CBD component. Very high demand for it, even within the recreational market.
So how much of a, do you buy any cannabis on the wholesale market?
No.
You produce it all yourself, right?
Well, the whole...
You just buy other products, edible products,
from other vendors. From other vendors. Things that I'm not able to do because of licensing.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Do people ask about CBD?
All the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What about concentrates to flower? Because we joke about that as we're dinosaurs and we're flower smokers. What are your number of customers? You probably have a skewed view because people might come to you for the flower.
Definitely, I've become a
destination
for the flower folks. And initially, we had not much requests for traditional concentrates, shatters, waxes, etc. With the tourist season, it's really changed. And now that we're on a lot of the locals' radar, and the fact that we've just had two grow house, or within just the last month, a grow house with two extraction labs in it blow up. That's really scaring all the people that are used to making their own concentrates.
Right, right.
And really seeing a big uptick in the requests and purchases and broadening our what we're offering.
When people ask for stuff, do they come in and they ask for shatter or concentrates? How do they phrase it?
Well, some people know what they want. Mm-hmm. Some people are interested in concentrates broadly.
Hey, bro, I need the terpiest terp you got.
It's definitely not our market up there. I think that's more of an urban thing.
Right. But people are still dabbing or putting in pens.
There's definitely a big demand for CO2 cartridges or CO2 oil.
Cartridges for pens.
Yep.
Right.
That seems to be a really growing market. Mm-hmm. It's one that I don't really identify with because it's completely not what I am into pot for.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are cued into the word shatter.
Mm-hmm. Do they know what it is, or they just ask for it?
I think that there's some people that are from out of state that don't know what it is and ask for it, don't know what to do with it when they get it.
They've read about it in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
And
saw it on Time Magazine. Shatter. Yeah. I'm going to get some of that shatter they got up in Colorado.
But it's fun when you have out-of-state folks who are enthusiasts and, have a little bit of exposure to, I won't say connoisseur pot, but not your average Colorado imports.
So what's your vacation trip? What do you call them? Out-of-state sales. What is your out-of-state sales? Not out-of-state sales, but non-resident sales?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call it. What's your numbers on that? Is it like?
Earlier, we had been tracking it because it was necessary, and the out-of-state folks were limited to a quarter ounce.
But now they can buy an ounce.
Now everybody can buy an ounce.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah.
But the out-of-state folks buy the shit out of edibles.
Yeah, no doubt. Love it.
They're
making some edibles.
Oh, yeah. And I'm always very hesitant to...
You know what's going on. They're not going to eat all that, right?
Well, there's some folks
maybe you don't.
That,
you're like me. We got no idea what our customer does with the product once they leave.
Well,
that's not our responsibility. That's theirs.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. I mean, but... You know, a lot of folks have no experience with cannabis, and they're scared to smoke it. And so those are the people that I'm really
that's
hesitant.
That's how you're worried about it.
That's
right.
When okay. That really gets me worried
because
I don't want you to have a bad time. And, that's nobody's happy on too much edible.
Absolutely. I've had to ease my way back up into it. That's for sure. I used to be a big ganja food eater and then had some couple of I ate too much episodes.
Well, there's that sandwich I gave you that one time. The coconut oil.
I barely, it was like a peanut butter. It was like a peanut butter ganja oil sandwich. Oh my gosh. I remember I was living in the loft above my shop in Colorado when I first opened it up. I lived up there, right? Yeah, man. Those are the good old days.
Now I can't be really edible high and deal with the public.
So when your customer comes in, do you have a typical customer?
The common thread is cannabis.
And isn't that interesting?
All and walks it's of really life. Surprising. You'll have anybody from little old ladies from Brooklyn or somewhere in New York who haven't gotten high since the 70s. And you'll have people that come regularly from Kansas. You'll have kids.
21 and over.
Policemen. Everybody comes.
Mm-hmm.
So
one of the things about cannabis is people of all walks of life and all economies.
Oh yeah,
like smoking the herb.
Oh yeah, there's surprises in my day, in my regular day. You know, you'll be, wow, you would have never thought.
Yeah, man, we got so many elections coming up here in the future. Here in November, there's a bunch of states that are voting for rec or voting for medical. Tide. If the tide changes like that, I'm sure they all won't go, but they all seem positive. Man, just like I've heard $20 to $40 billion predictions for 2020 in the cannabis economy.
Wow.
Right. Totally. Right. I've also heard like this market peaking out, you know, 2018, 2019. It's the real dirt with Chip Baker. Fairly lit right now as Stacy's smoked a half an ounce of weed while he's been here. Do you normally smoke joints?
That's my preferred method when I've got the time.
Yeah, when you got the time. Yeah, it didn't take you too long to roll that joint up, so it doesn't require too much.
Yeah, you know, there's no on-site or on-premise consumption. So
sure.
That limits my time to...
Do you know about the new social consumption law coming up?
I've heard there's two potential things that might get wrapped into one, but...
Yeah, absolutely. There's we're definitely in support of one. We're going to promote it on this show. I'm not sure how it's going to unfold, but soon enough we will know.
So, that will make things really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what's lacking.
Yeah, there's so much social component to smoking cannabis. It always has been. You do it in groups of people. And, you know, it's interesting. You can smoke a joint to yourself or joint with 10 people and
get higher.
And get totally.
Yeah.
Maybe not 10 people, but,
yeah.
You know, you just throw a couple other sets of lungs on it and you feed off one another. It's just, there's a social component to it. And, to have social consumption definitely is the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado does that. Well, that's pretty progressive. That's for sure. Man, you use any special terminology?
In regards to...
In regards to like, I ask people this question like, hey, what special words have you developed or do you use in your industry that are outside the industry, slang, terminology?
The only thing I would say that I use or think about things in potentially a different way is in my garden. I try to have what I call a garden strategy and, you know, an overall objective and the means that I get thereby. And, you know, that strategy can...
Do you use a calendar or a spreadsheet?
No, you know, I'm still strongly in the old school. And
this is your vibing it out.
And
right, you're working it.
You know, and I definitely would be, in all aspects of my business, benefited by learning how to use traditional business tools a little bit more.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? A little bit more business skills.
But, you know, I don't really keep a calendar anymore because Metric tells me when I've, you know, changed plants growth phase, and I can go back and look and check to see if the garden is actually where it is in its schedule based on, you know, what it looks like to me.
Right. You can run a report through Metric.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Just check it and see where I'm at. But the only terminology that we use is making fun of the kids, mocking them.
Oh, you know, yeah.
All about them loud terps and all that jive. But, you know, one of the things we really were trying to stay away from is lingo and jargon that causes folks that aren't quite so young and in the scene, you know, I don't want to cause them to feel uncomfortable by not knowing what words are. So, you know, we try to break it down into as basic as possible. You know, the people have a real subjective experience with cannabis.
Do people come in and ask for indica or sativa?
Oh, yeah. You know, and it's really been sold to the public as gospel. And it's...
Hey, I need an indica or a sativa.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
So for me, it's hard when I have to be on the retail end of things to engage the public in a way that I don't really think about pot.
Mm-hmm. Right, because we both think about it the same way, as it's all polyhybrids.
Yeah.
And you had a great explanation of a sativa recently to me, right, which was...
I think I told someone who came in they wanted 100% sativa, and I said that if I had 100% sativa, they wouldn't want it because it wouldn't look like they want pot to look like, mm-hmm. and that they wouldn't be able to afford it if I did have it for sale.
Right, because of the 20-week growth strategies on it.
And the headroom and, you know, the disaster that it would really be. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's difficult to engage the customer, the client, cannabis consumer as a person who's grown for a long time and mm-hmm. had a more intimate relationship with the plant, to have to break it down as if I was selling red wine or white wine, you know, when there's so much more than that in the wine aisle. And then the consumer really wants to be told what to buy, which is a really odd thing to be in that position to direct someone. You know, there's a lot of shit talk in the grower and cannabis industry about Blue Dream, but, you know, people go to that like people did to Sierra Nevada for so many years.
Blue Dreams.
Because they were familiar with it. It's got a friendly name, and I like Blue Dream.
It's huge. The biggest outdoor plants I think I've ever seen. Some of the largest yielders I've ever seen. Blue Dreams, for sure. Like 9-10 pound plants, real. You know, full season outdoor Northern California, perfect environment, great grower, you know, just huge, right? Easy to grow, right? Pleasant, fruity flavor,
mm-hmm.
right? Mild smoke.
Performs well.
Yeah, I do market research. I go to grow dispensaries all over and, you know, buy some of their weed. My wife does the same thing, all market research, of course. But so much of it's Blue Dream, and they say it's something else.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Because you know I know, right?
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, like, there's a lot of strains out there. Let me rephrase this appropriately. There's a lot of cannabis sold in legal dispensaries with strains that aren't the strains you think you're buying.
Oh, I'm sure.
Sure. I have seen, you know, all kinds of things passed off as OG, off as skunk, off as super, off as a sour diesel, right? Just, you know, just making up names, right? Oh, we got people love sour diesel here. Let's call this sour diesel and sell it. And there's no regulation on that type of thing.
Oh, well, there's no regulation on what you call it at all.
Yeah, right.
There's no, I mean, I could say I've got the most desirable thing that's esoteric and, you know, held closely, and people are threatened if they give it out, and I can call it that. But, you know, I think that we'll see, as soon as the federal government allows for intellectual property enforcement in the cannabis industry, you know, then you'll see people not allowing you to sell stuff that's called something. And I believe they're getting close genetically to be able to really tell what's happening. There was just recently a seminar on using testing to be able to establish some intellectual property rights. Missed that one. Couldn't make it out of the mountains for it.
So the future's here.
Yeah.
It's not just backwoods. It's not just in the closet anymore. It's not behind closed doors. Everything's becoming regulated and tested. The alcohol industry went through a similar thing, you know. So tell us about the future. What's happening in the future? Can you look in your one of your two large crystal balls and tell me what the future is?
Well, I think what I say that one time we were talking from the basement to the boardroom.
Basement to the boardroom.
And, you know, I am kind of on the peripheral of the cannabis industry being up in Netherlands. And I'm remarkably small scenario. But, you know, from my perspective, the thing that I see is that there's been a tremendous amount of capital that's come into the state. The grows are over-licensed. There's an excess amount of material on the market that's flooding the concentrate market right now. Wholesale prices are getting pretty close to half of what they were when I opened in February.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we'll see, just like we have in the booze and the beer industry, a continued consolidation. There seems to be an effort to begin rebranding and remarketing businesses under a more of a craft motif. And I think that they're poorly positioned to fill that niche.
Few people are like you.
Yeah.
Right? They grow small, you know, they can generate all their sales.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, from clone to sale, there could be three, maybe four people that are come in contact with the pot that's sold out of my harvest house. You know, and that's, I think the largest organization has 1,000 employees.
Wow, who's that?
I've heard Livois, 1,000.
Oh, yeah, they're big. They're the biggest.
Yeah, Native Roots is probably right behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things I never wanted to do is sell other people's pot. But with the way that things are changing, and I think that there's going to be a real opportunity to get from the few good growers and smaller operations that I know of, that there's going to be extra pot. And I want to bring on, just like a brewery might have a guest tap or two,
True.
You know, have some stuff.
Yeah, great weed.
From
right?
friends, you know,
yeah.
like what they're doing and bring them into the mix. But I think it's going to be a time of transition that is going to disappoint a lot of people. And you know, at this point, there's a garden going in Netherlands right now that when it was, I'm sure, planning, the wholesale market was three times what it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's going to be no middle ground or not a lot of middle ground. I think there's going to be really good, well-organized, based on excellent traditional business practices.
Sure.
With realistic expectations on return on investment and the time frame for that return on investment. You know, there's been a get-rich-quick approach.
With cannabis for years.
You know, everybody wants to get a home run on their first time up to bat. And I don't think that's the reality.
Right. No, a few people do. That's for sure. I've seen some people make it, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. It was hard as hell to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I say success through failure. You know, other people say failure is just when you don't get up. Right. But I know I've seen you knock down and get back up over and over again. Man, it's been great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been real fun. I'm not sure how much herb you smoked here, probably like 2 ounces or something. That one joint went for, I don't know, I can't even see it on the tape here. It must have been like 35, 45 minutes.
That's about what it takes.
Great, man. Joint. Well, yep, here's Real Dirt. I'm here with Stacy Johnson, Harvest House, Nederland, Colorado. Thanks, Stacy.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, well, I guess we got to the dirt of that. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Denver Consulting, Bickle Consulting, Archive Seed Bank, Canacraft, Cultivate Colorado. Let me give it up to my production team, Willow, Phipps, Lisa, Chris, Michael, and Hollis. Thanks, guys. And to the rest of you, stay dirty, my friends.